This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hour number two, what's happening? What's good? Tiki and Tierney company from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. Hopefully everybody's doing well. Teak, now, I know it's an opinion, okay? It's an opinion, but It's an opinion that caught my eye. I want to read something to you because it gets into our next topic about the younger quarterbacks now. Dan Orlovsky, you know Dan from ESPN, right?
Yep.
Who's probably going to be doing Monday Night Football.
UConn, one of UConn's greatest.
Yeah, yep, quarterback at UConn.
That's right.
So he said this today. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what he said. He said, I'm taking Sam Darnold over every young quarterback that's come into the NFL the last 3 years. Lamar Jackson, if he gets drafted by the Jets, does he win the MVP? Sam Darnold's one of the most talented guys that's come out of the draft in years. End quote. From a guy who knows quarterbacks. Now, doesn't mean he's going to nail this one. There's a lot of people who know quarterbacks who played quarterback who swing and miss on their thoughts about certain quarterbacks. But it is interesting because the direction of the game, Lamar Jackson was phenomenal. He's so much fun to watch. Wins the MVP, rightfully so. We've seen the magic of Mahomes. We've seen Josh Allen, who loves to run. Maybe a little bit of a victim of stereotyping because he runs almost as effectively as Lamar.
Yep.
But because he's white, it's maybe positioned a little bit differently. And we still live in that world, unfortunately. But
yeah.
it's an interesting time because, you know, the drop back passer is not quite a dinosaur, but it's morphing in that direction.
It's just not that interesting anymore. I mean, it's cool if you have a guy who's just pinpoint accurate and can drop back, hit seven steps, and let the ball go. And man, that thing hit that guy with a bullet shot out of a gun 15 yards downfield. But that doesn't win football games like it used to. You know what I mean? I think it's evolved, right? And back to Dan Orlovsky's comments on Sam Darnold, he's right. He does have all the talent in the world, but talent is a dirty word in sports. We know this. Like think about the Michael Jordan. That guy was better than Michael Jordan out on the court, right? Yeah, okay, whatever. He didn't go to college and he didn't make it. So he might have been, but he never, you know, took advantage of his potential opportunity. It's all about that. And I think the evolution of the quarterback is interesting in the NFL, BT, because it did used to be we need the Dan Marino type. Who cares if he's stuck in the mud? As long as he can sling it around and get his guys in position to be successful, then fantastic. You know, he's going to be our franchise quarterback for the next 15 years. I think that's evolving in a little bit of ways. Now, you're still going to get that, right? You're going to get that with the Daniel Jones type selections or Sam Darnold, you know, to be perfectly honest with you.
But both of those guys can move. Jones has some wiggle,
agreed,
too.
But they're viewed as, like, the guy for the next, you know, for 15 years or so, because that's what those organizations look to do. But there's others. And I think the Arizona Cardinals are one, with Kyler Murray. Clearly, the Baltimore Ravens are this with Lamar Jackson. It's more about, and to an extent, the Kansas City Chiefs are this way, but it's more of a hybrid because they want an immediate impact and long-term success, sustainability. And I think Pat Mahomes is one of the rare guys that can do that, right? And so I think what you're starting to see is teams are making a decision. When we draft a quarterback, you know, what do we want from him? Do we want him to be our guy so we can sell, you know, merchandise and build a brand and hopefully win, you know, for the next 10 years? Or I want a guy who's going to be impactful right now, right? And he's going to win an MVP. And if we're good enough, we build a good enough team around him before we have to pay him on his fifth-year option and franchise down and franchise numbers down the line, can we win right now, right? And I think that's starting to become in vogue, right? It's not about we suck. We're going to get a quarterback who's going to be our guy for the next 15 years, and we're just going to slowly build around him. It's like, let's get a team, and let's go try to win this thing right now. That's what it feels like some of these teams are starting to do. There's only a handful of them, but it's happening. Like, you really see it, and we saw it with great success with the Kansas City Chiefs and also with the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Jared Goff is such an interesting figure here, because he already got paid.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a real elite. He's certainly not an elite athlete by any stretch.
No.
Nor does he have a rocket. He makes all the throws, but he doesn't have this howitzer that Josh Allen has.
He's not scaring you. Yeah, he's not scaring you.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, you know, he's the guy who's kind of stuck in between, whereas, you know, somebody like, say, Dak isn't the runner that Lamar Jackson is. And never will be, nor is he the thrower that Patty Mahomes is, and never will be.
Yep.
But he's kind of a poor man's version of both, which neatly tied together is actually pretty good.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. But I think it all comes down to, can you win? Like, can you win a championship with your guy? And again, I think about the old school game of this. It was, how long can we keep a guy and groom him and win consistently, get deep into the postseason, and hopefully win a championship at some point? It's that mentality has been washed away to an extent because of what we've seen. Now, we've seen it with the Pats, who played that game for a long time. I mean, 20 years they played it, and it worked. I mean, they won six championships over that time. But the ones that are on the doorstep or have just won, like the Kansas City Chiefs, it's an immediacy thing. And I honestly, I think it's more entertaining this way. When you have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, who, hell, in 5 years, he might not be the guy in Baltimore because of injury or whatever, right? Yep. Who knows what the circumstance may be? Or Kyler Murray, he might not be the guy in 5 or 6 years. But they're exciting right now, and they give you an immediate chance to win, which I gravitate towards. It's why I love watching the Ravens. It's why I, even though they weren't great and they lost some games that they probably should have won, it's why I loved watching the Arizona Cardinals. It's just it's a new, like, it feels like there's a new era budding in the National Football League as it pertains to the quarterback and how you're approaching him.
You know, it's funny, too, because one of the most recent selections of prominence was Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
And I know his circumstances have derailed whatever. Well, I mean, unless it just somehow magically.
I feel so bad for that kid, man.
I can't even speak because the guy's so confounded. Jeez. Yeah.
I just feel bad for him, man. Seriously. Is he, like, do you ever see him getting a chance to start somewhere?
You know,
like,
listen.
Honestly.
You know, he's going, at this point, he's incredibly cheap.
True.
So,
and he's still young, by the way. It's only his third year,
he's
right?
Incredibly young, and he's incredibly smart. So he'll pick up any playbook. Now,
that's right.
Does that equate to a starting job? No. Does that equate to maybe in the next year or two? Like, if I'm the Packers, I'd rather have him backing up Aaron Rodgers than maybe than burning a first round pick on Jordan Love. Like,
that's a good point.
That would be the more prudent play. I get it. I get Rodgers a weapon. You know, I put somebody in the bullpen who obviously could absorb whatever Aaron, you know, teaches through his play.
It's a great point.
You know what I mean? So I can't say with great confidence he does, but I mean, I wouldn't rule it out because he's cheap, he's young, and he's smart.
Yeah, but
you know?
but
my point was that he's not athletic at all.
I hear you.
He's the one guy who can't really move. Of all, even Baker's got a little wiggle. Darnold can move. Daniel Jones can move. Josh Allen can move. Lamar Jackson can fly. Jordan Love can move. He's really the only guy who can't move at all.
Yeah.
Based on today's standards.
Well, it's also because of what you're seeing in the college game, right? You know, in the college game, very rarely are you playing that straight up drop back pass game any longer. Turn it around when. And handing it off out of the eye, and, you know, 3-step drop, 5-step drop, 6-7-step drop. It's not that anymore.
Nope.
It's all roll out. It's let's run some zone read, and we'll pull up and throw, you know, throw pop passes to the tight end or whatever it may be. The college game has changed so much. So you're not seeing any of those guys like Josh Rosen very often. Now, he was great at college, Josh Rosen, and we saw him, you know, miraculously win some games that they had no business winning. But I think on the NFL level, it's limiting anymore. because the coordinators are all the same. They're coming from college, right? Mm-hmm. They're young and they have these different ideas.
And the head coaches, Matt Rhule.
That's right. They're all
Kingsbury.
They're all coming from college, and they see the game differently than the old heads, and so that has a direct impact on how quarterbacks are going to be played, and in how GMs are going to draft quarterbacks. And it's kind of stark, man. If you really look at it over the last decade or so, the quarterbacks that were drafted versus the quarterbacks that are drafted now, they don't look anything alike.
No. I mean, think about Sam. Well, Sam was a good athlete.
Yeah, but
so was Stafford.
But he got hurt. I mean, I feel like he got hurt every single year.
Well, he did.
But it's not his. It wasn't his fault. But
no. Carson Wentz is a very good athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny too because. And I use the term old head before. I'm going to sound like an old head. I prefer more throwing than running. I just do.
Yeah.
That's why you have running back. You got flankers. You got receivers. You got spread it out. I want my quarterback to throw it.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. So unless he's so damn good like Lamar Jackson, it just blows you off the page. Because like most running quarterbacks, guys that are going to do it, I don't necessarily trust them. You know what I mean? It's like you start taking off, and I'm like something bad's going to happen. Like I see whoever it is, Josh Allen, when he takes off, I know he's a good runner, and we keep bringing it up. But every time I see him like running down the field, I'm like, dude, something bad's about to happen, right?
What, you mean like ball security or injury?
Yeah, well, ball security or injury. Right. Carson Wentz the same way. It's like Carson Wentz was like just galvanizing quarterback, like on the verge of winning the MVP with the Eagles, and he dives into the end zone. It's like something bad's about to happen. You know what I mean?
Twice.
Exactly.
But two parts of his knee against
Robert Griffin, who was a good athlete as well. Like he would take these hits. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You're not a running back. And so every time he took off, I'm like, ow, something bad's about to happen. But when I watch Lamar Jackson, I'm like, somebody's about to get their jock left. I see this guy who's bearing down on him. He thinks he's about to clock him, but you're about to fly by him. He's going to put on the brakes like Maverick and Top Gun, and he's going to go rip off another 30 or 40 yards. Right? He's the only one. Lamar Jackson's the only one I look at that I say, man, I can't. I love to see that kid run. But to your point, BT, you're right. All the other ones, I'm like, stop, wait, get down. You know what I mean?
Yep. So I love the rollouts. Like I love the misdirections. I love the boots. I love those and. Every once in a while, if you do something, if there's a breakdown or whatever, and the quarterback scoots for 30, 40 yards, that's awesome.
That's Russell Wilson 101, man.
Russell Wilson, no doubt. Yeah, Russell Wilson, of course, the most underrated player in the game, in all sport. But, I want to see, I like the ratio of, I'll just throw it out numbers here. I would love my quarterback to throw it ideally 30 times and, have 4 or 5 rushing attempts. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see, 19 attempts and 12 or 13 rushes.
Yeah.
That's just not going to end well. And there's nobody on this football planet that can convince me otherwise. That is not going to end well.
Yeah.
Cam Newton is like a freight train. He's already done.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson looks like a twig compared to him.
Yeah. And again, that's why I said, in 5 years, he might not be the guy in Baltimore. I hope he does and he gets paid and everything else. But who knows how long that lasts. But that's the changing nature of the game. I just don't know if it'll fully change. Like, we're never going to get fully to college where it's like the quarterback is basically a running back who has to throw the ball every now and then. That's never going to happen in the National Football League because the quarterback position, simply by having that QB next to your name, it raises the value of the position, right? And so you're not paying a guy $20+ million if he's not going to be there for you in 3 or 4 years. So it's just money makes that dictates what you're saying is going to continue to happen.
I just wonder, there's always one, whether it's the Wildcat, whether it's the run and shoot, whether there's...
yeah, but those are fads.
No, that's what I was going to say. I wonder, and it's going to happen. It's not going to last, I don't think, but who's going to be the first team, maybe out of necessity, they're in a rough spot, trying to get creative to kind of, bridge the gap of an absence of talent. There's going to be a team at some point whose quarterback does play the way they play in college primarily, who is much like Tebow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know they tried to do it.
You know who it is?
Who?
It's the Saints, man. It's Sean Payton. Clearly, Sean Payton wants that because Taysom Hill, as much as we like him, his versatility, he's thrown the ball 19 times in his 3 years. You know what I mean? He's completing, what, 50% of his passes?
But I don't think he's ever going to be their starter. And you know Sean,
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. But if there was a team that was going to do it, it would be the New Orleans Saints because they have two really good running backs. And obviously, Taysom Hill could play that kind of offense. It's what he did at BYU. Right, a couple years ago, or you know, whatever it was, I think it was his senior season at BYU.
Because he had the mission.
Yep, he had, was it USC they were playing? I can't remember, but he had like 250 yards rushing as a quarterback. And, you know, I think he was, you know, he completed like 48% of his passes, and he was bad on the air. But they had a humongous upset, and I think it was because he was the runner. I don't know if that works in the NFL, especially with the athleticism, but there's going to be some team that tries it at some point. And if I was guessing, I'd say it'd be the Saints.
You better have a great defense because, you know, it's a little easier to shred a defense through the air and get some points quick when you throw it than it is. I'm not saying you can't rip off the 70-yard pop. I mean, it has happened. But if that's the plan in New Orleans, and you know, I don't think it is, but or anywhere, I should say, if that's the plan anywhere or if that's even – not even the plan, but that's what transpires based on necessity. That team, I mean, that's a one-trick pony.
Sorry.
And that gets snuffed out. Even if it's fun.
It's desperation. It's desperation. Yep. Pure desperation.
Yep. Might be a fad for a little bit. Might even be lauded for a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Oh, is this the new changing of the NFL? You know, the new frontier. It's the way it's going to look. You got to have a guy that can spiral it. I mean, that's all there is to it, especially depending on some of these cities that you play in. Like up in Buffalo, you got to be able to throw it. Last time they were great, Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly had a rocket.
Yeah.
Jim Kelly was terrific throwing the football. Terrific. All right. Yeah, we'll see. We shall see. You know, one of the things I always think about when, or at least during the pandemic, how other commissioners would have handled, whether it's the messaging or maybe things that they see that they would have done maybe a little differently here. Paul Tagliabue is going to join us coming up next, the former NFL commissioner who we had on our show at the Super Bowl. Real gentleman, one of the real good men. We'll get his thoughts on the job so far, at least from a messaging point of view, the NFL, what Goodell's doing, what he thinks Goodell might change. Obviously, the tweak to the Rooney Rule. A lot of things to hit with the former commish, which we will do coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line on this Wednesday around the country is 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Geico's introduced the Geico Give Back. It's a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that'll last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. All right, this will be a treat, Teak. We haven't seen him since the Super Bowl when we had him on our set, and that is the former commissioner of the NFL, the great Paul Tagliabue, who was in the post from 1989 through 2006, and inducted into the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's had an incredible career and one of the good people around the game for sure. Kamish, welcome back. How you been?
I've been fine. Been very good. How about you?
Very well. Thank you.
Yeah, we've been very good, Kamish. Thanks for hopping on with us today. I know that you sit on the board of governors of RISE, and we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, just getting to the coronavirus impact that's been on this world, but particularly in sports, I think there is a leadership role that sports has played because it's so visible and people pay so much attention to it. What should Commissioner Goodell and Adam Silver and the other commissioners of the other leagues, how should they be handling this? Because I think a lot of our country is going to take out their cues from them. They're the leaders, just like you used to be.
Well, I can't speak for them, but I think what they've been doing has been spot on based on what I've seen. I mean, very good. They've been focusing on the health issues and the difficulty of how to deal with crowds of people, which all the data shows that that's a big, big challenge with this particular virus. You know, to me, it's similar to what they're doing at the universities. I was chairman of the board at Georgetown for 6 years and on the board for 12. I've been talking to some of the people over there. It's a big challenge, just with 6,000 students, to bring them back to a campus and have them have meals together, play sports together, and go to class together. So when you're talking about 60,000 people coming into a stadium, it's a very big challenge. I think the commissioners have been doing a fine job in trying to deal with it effectively.
Yeah, and I know that you know this from experience. When you're talking about a professional sport, it's not just what you say goes, because so much of professional sports are collectively bargained with the players. You know, how challenging is it going to be for, say, baseball, because we're starting to see this come to a head now with the revenue sharing and other issues that are somewhat unrelated to the virus, even though the virus is front and center. How difficult is it to get all parties on the same page to make something that we all want happen?
Well, that's the challenge, you know, whether it's for the commissioner or the head of the Players Association or the, you know, the owners of the player reps. It's you got a lot of constituents in sports, and many collective bargaining situations. There's one or two employers here. You got 32 different employers in a sense in football, and you know, sometimes what's good for one group is terrible for another group. Back in '93, when we got the deal done, we were raising the player costs of some really good teams like the Raiders and the Steelers, and lowering the ability of other teams to continue paying the players they had, like San Francisco and Washington. Now, how do you solve that problem?
Yeah.
The Redskins and the 49ers might have to cut players, and the Steelers and the Raiders would pay players far more than they ever dreamed, and they had good football teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they were low-revenue teams to boot. So it takes time and a little bit of luck. And it takes a little bit of risk-taking, too. Each side's got to take some risks.
There's no question. Calculated ones, for sure, but risks. And that is the great commissioner, formerly of the NFL, Paul Tagliabue, 1989 through 2006, 2020 Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee. You know, so many it's very rare, Paul, that a commissioner has, even if it's a relatively short tenure, not many issues to deal with. They could be labor strife. They could be war-related, certainly from baseball's point of view, which has been around forever. They could be cheating scandals. I mean, the pandemic, I'm trying to, like, place this in terms of a challenge for Goodell. Is there another time in the NFL that you think was more challenging than right now, trying to sift through this medically and from a science point of view and hope we get it right?
I can't think of one. I can't think of one for the NFL, and I can't think of one for the nation. And I'm, you know, listening to historians talk about this issue and people who are familiar with the pandemic in 1918 and other episodes we've had with czars and mirrors and things like that. But one historian said this is the first time in our nation's history where every citizen has been, in effect, in combat. We go to World War II, you had several million men fighting in Europe. The rest of the society was at home, of course, tragically engaged indirectly. But here everyone's a direct potential target of this combat.
Yeah.
With this virus. That's unprecedented.
Yeah.
And we've never had a situation where everyone had to be locked down as we're doing right now. People have had to deal with blackout screens at night and worrying about bombs, but that fortunately never landed on the United States in World War II. But to me, I think the historians who say this is unprecedented got it right.
For sure. What was your opinion on how the draft was conducted? What did you think about that?
You know, I thought it was very good. I think doing it was the right thing. I think it showed that you got to keep going in life, but it was respectful of the medical issues, the way that everyone was distancing and in their own little pod. You know, could you do something differently? You could probably have the coaches wear the same gear on draft day that they wear on game day. Because I was looking at it from a distance without the voice on, I didn't recognize some of the coaches. If they had Philadelphia green on there, I would have known who it was. If they had some other color on there, I wouldn't know it was Cleveland. But anyway, I thought it was terrific.
You know, Kamish, you know, we've talked to a couple of coaches and former coaches who are on the diversity committee, Tony Dungy, a couple of days ago, about the new proposal surrounding the Rooney Rule. Now, the Rooney Rule was instituted in the back end of your commissionership, 2003, and you retired in 2006. And I know what you knew the intent of the Rooney Rule was. It hasn't quite worked out like it probably was designed by Dan Rooney. How can they fix it? You know, we've seen some proposals that have come out over the last couple of days. One was tabled with draft compensation, but how can you get it back to its original thought?
Well, I think the original thought was two things, and I think this is still very important. Number one is the pipeline of coaches and focusing on the things that owners are looking for when you create that pipeline. And I'll come back to that in a minute. The second thing is making sure the owners and the club presidents and the general managers know who these people are. You know, I used to remember what Herman Edwards told me when he got the Jets job. How did he get it? He got it because Woody Johnson saw Herman speak at a league meeting when he was Herman was operating with the competition committee, and we gave him the opportunity to talk to the owners. And so that time and opportunity is really important. Yeah, and in terms of getting to know who they are, Bill Walsh was very important. Look back at history. He had Ray Rhodes on his staff. He had Dennis Green on his staff. But it wasn't just African-Americans. It was Mike Holmgren and Shanahan as well.
Yeah.
Bill was an advocate. He was an advocate for great coaches, and the color didn't matter. Just take those four examples. They all became head coaches, and he played a significant part. He spoke to me about Dennis Green. We both spoke to Roger Hendrick, who was the president of the Vikings in 92. Dennis became the second African-American head coach in the league and in modern history. So you need to get not just the pipeline, but you have to make sure that the people who are doing the hiring know who's in the pipeline. And how you do that in 2020, that's for this committee to come up with, and I'm sure they're working hard on it.
But, Paul, how does it seemingly go backwards after those great stories you just shared? Or even if they don't go backwards, kind of remain unchanged. How is there no more progress from that the Herman Edwards story you talk? Like, why did it become stagnant?
Well, I guess the best you can say is that it's cyclical. We had situations, I think in 96 and 98, we had Dennis Green. We had some other points of progress in the ranks, especially coordinators. All of a sudden, we had zero. In 1 year, I remember writing an op-ed for the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And it turns out to be cyclical. I think there's a big difference between today and 2003-2004. I looked at the sheet the other day. 17 of the 32 clubs have had African-American head coaches. When we did the Rooney Rule, or when I became commissioner, there were none. In 1989, yeah. Art Shell was hired that year, and Dennis Green 3 years later. Today you have 17 of the teams have hired African-American coaches, and two, Carolina, Washington, have had Ron Rivera as a Hispanic. Al Davis had Tom Flores as a Hispanic. Mm-hmm. They have, roughly two-thirds of the league have had coaches. Six or seven of the teams have had two African-American coaches. So whatever the issues are today, they're different from what they were in 2003. You can't just go back and say, this is what we did then, this is what we have to do now, which I think is why it's so important that the Competition Committee and the Diversity Committee and the Commissioner and the Fitzpatrick Alliance are all working on this together.
Hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead, Teague.
Yeah. Now I know that you are on the Ross Initiative in Sports for Equality, RISE, Board of Governors, and you guys have been on a lot of important things around communication, and particularly how COVID-19 has affected communication for the leagues and coaches and everything else. But this is really a racial equality thing, I think, in RISE's standpoint. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with RISE and how important this work is for our communities.
Well, I think it's really important, and it's a great initiative. It involves over 20 different sports organizations, professional leagues, professional organizations that are not leagues like NASCAR, college organizations. We've got a partnership with the Association of College ADs, which is over 1,500 athletic directors. And our goal is to bring people together. When I became commissioner, not too many people know this. When I became commissioner, I got a letter from former President Ronald Reagan. I had met with him in New Orleans around the Super Bowl in 1990. He sent me a letter, and I'm going to read it to you in part. He says,
"Nice.
The guiding principle of our lives includes sports. When athletes put on their uniforms and take their place on the playing field, it doesn't matter whether they're rich or poor, black or white, Jew or Christian. It just matters that what they do, that they do their best." And then he said, "Wouldn't it be something if that spirit of togetherness and sportsmanship could stay with us when the games are over?" That's what RISE is about. We're trying to get beyond these divides in our society. People have more in common than they realize sometimes, and then they get mixed up by, people who are saying, "Well, it's I win, you lose" type of society. It's not. It's like a football team. You're all in it together. Mm-hmm. You don't win if the offense plays well and the defense sits on its butt. You win if both parts of the team play together. That's how you win in society too, and that's what RISE is about. What do? We do a lot of programs through the leagues and the teams with kids in communities, high school athletes in communities, police officers in communities, bringing people together and recognizing they have more in common than what divides them. And the differences sometimes, racial differences, are irrelevant. What's important is your family. Your father was a police officer. His father was a police officer. One guy's black, one guy's Hispanic, one guy's white. Doesn't matter your color. It matters what you do with your family and in your community.
Great stuff. And he pulls a letter from Ronald Reagan. That's
fantastic.
That is great.
Hanging on the wall here in my
room. did you take it off the wall, or did you move toward the wall to read it?
Well, I might do that when I'm speaking at the Hall of Fame.
Doing soon. 2020 inductee, former commish, 1989 through 2006, Paul Tagliabue. It's an honor, sir. Nice to have you back on the show. Thank you very much.
Good to be with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
That is a good man right there.
Yeah, great letter. Great letter from President Reagan.
How about that?
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Oh, pretty solid. Great initiative by RISE also, the Ross Institute. Fantastic as well.
No doubt. I saw something before that I interpret as pretty good news for college football to get back. We'll get to that coming up next. This is pretty interesting. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. But first, we got Ack. Here's Rich Ackerman. Tonight at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, get inside the cage and relive the heavyweight world Grand Prix final as Federer battles Bader. With the title on the line, don't miss Bellator MMA Recharged on CBS Sports Network. Great chat with the commish. That was really good. Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. All right, this is the news you've been waiting for. Now, it doesn't mean on August whatever that there's going to be 80,000 people in the stadium. Certainly not going to mean that. Watching a team from the SEC take on somebody from, I don't know, the Big 12 or the Pac-12 in a non-conference little appetizer to start the season. But this is something you've been waiting for. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The NCAA Council has voted to lift the moratorium on athletic-related activities for three major sports. The vote allows for voluntary athletic activities for football and men's and women's basketball to run through the month of June. The Wednesday vote comes as states across the country are obviously lifting their own shelter-in-place restrictions amid the global COVID-19 blah, 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 blah. The vote paves the way for schools and conferences to allow athletes back on campus for workouts. SEC presidents are scheduled to vote Friday on whether to open their schools for athletic-related activities on June 1. The MAC will do the same thing. Listen, this is a significant moment here. This is something that the college football fan and basketball fan has been waiting for. It's a thawing in the, in that icy stone wall that didn't seem to have much room for penetration as we tried to determine when we're going to get back to normalcy. Mm-hmm. This is a step in the right direction. Get them back on campus. Let's start working out. Let's go.
I think there's, it would be naive to think that there weren't economic motivations behind this, BT, because we all know this.
Yeah. Like,
these athletic departments and schools in general are in danger of losing a significant amount of programs if they don't play a college football season and college basketball as well. And so this is encouraging. I agree with you, BT, but it's not like they're saying, yeah, we're going to have a season and it's going to be right around the corner. What they're doing, I think, is prepping themselves for if there is a season and it starts. It's not going to start on time, but say relatively, not too much later, that they're not going to have to ramp up, right? That's the big issue with the NBA right now.
Yep.
We keep talking about the NBA wants to finish their season. There's some players that are skeptical, but still, they want to finish the season. But how the hell do you ramp up, however many teams end up, if they go straight to the playoffs or whatever, however many teams they have to ramp back up? How are you doing that in a 2 week or 3 week period to fit in the entire, postseason, all seven games of each series before the start of the next season, or at least even the pushback start of next season? It's just like you're going to run out of time. I think this is a smart move by the NCAA, or at least these commissioners, to at least prep for the start, even if it's a late start of their fall seasons, as opposed to just waiting until it's all clear and it's like, all right, now we're going to start.
Let's rush.
And then you can't get it done.
If you want to run a 20-mile race or a marathon, a 26.2, you got to start with a couple of miles. You got to get a little tread on those Nikes or those Saucony's or whatever you're wearing. right? What are you wearing? What do you wear? What
kind right of now? New Balance.
New Balance.
New Balance right now.
Or the New Balance. You got to get a few miles under there.
Right.
You know, you got to build up in increments, 2, 3, 4, and then eventually maybe you can do 20 or 26. And I look at it the same way. You know, this is a marathon to return to sporting normalcy, and you know, it's going to look different. You're not going to have 50 guys on a football field running routes and going through workouts, but you might have, all right, for the next 2 hours, we'll have 10 guys spread throughout the weight room with, instead of 6 feet, we'll be extra cautious, 12 feet. We'll double it up. We'll pay attention to social distancing. We'll get the body and the mind in sync under the professional tutelage of our coaching staff and physical trainers. This way, when it's time to get back for real, and we all hope that it's right around the time that it would start conventionally without the pandemic, you don't have to, like, ratchet up the body and the mind and just the team cohesion.
Yeah, that's right.
To kind of piece together the start of a season. That's dangerous.
Starting from zero, it's so hard, especially if you're going to rush it. I mean, there would be a rash of injuries, especially for some of these younger kids that aren't fully developed yet, or they're still developing, and now all of a sudden you want to try to catch up to that weightlifting program that you haven't been doing all season, but you had specific goals, and I could just see it being a mess if they didn't do something like this. I'm glad that they found a way to institute this, at least in theory, because it still has to be finalized, but in theory, I think it's a smart idea. As long as they keep the kids safe, keep them socially distanced, keep them from, fully interacting with each other and potentially passing on this virus if any of them should have it.
For sure, which unfortunately we know some will.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Let's transition, stay with the college game, but a totally different topic here. How about this story where the Power Five schools spend a couple of $100,000 to lobby Congress, basically to limit what the athletes can get paid. So they put out this unified, uniform front moving in the proper direction and understanding the marketplace. And then, let me also get the funds here to try to limit what they can do, and maybe nobody's going to find out.
It's a big number. It's not a humongous number.
The 300,000?
Yeah.
For them, it's nothing.
It's a big number, but it's not like, think of it, the airline industry. What are they spending to lobby Congress? Like a couple hundred million, maybe?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not a big number, but it is a big number. And
to me, there's more symbolism behind the number.
100%, BT. Yeah. That's where I was going.
Gotcha.
Because they support this. Because we all know that they've been exploiting student athletes for a long time because of the $1 billion that they get from TV revenue and regional sports networks and everything else. But the player gets bupkis. So when it actually gets passed, this name, image, likeness, NIL, they support it. But behind the scenes, they were cautiously supporting it. And it's valid reasons, though, BT. Like, you read the headline of this, and you're like, oh, these hypocrites, what the hell is wrong with them? But there are valid reasons. One, they didn't want the money to have to come from their budgets, which is not the case, right? The athletic departments are not paying out of their budgets athletes because they're stars or whatever they be. That's not going to happen. It has to be a third-party arrangement. The second one, and we've already heard this multiple times, is they need a uniform rule. They need a national rule on how to do this. Because if one state does it one way and another state does it another way, all of a sudden this advantage that amateurism, put that in quotes, that amateurism, kind of did away with, now becomes an advantage again for the wealthy states like Texas or California. Not that there's great, football or basketball in New York, but you know what I mean. The ones that have a lot of revenue, it becomes an advantage if there's not a national rule. So that's the other thing that they lobbied for. And the last one, BT, that caught my eye, centers around the Ed O'Bannon case. You remember this case? Essentially, Ed O'Bannon, he didn't want the NCAA to profit off of using his likeness, not his name, but his likeness in video games.
Yeah, sure.
And right,
it's been going on a long time. Yeah.
So there's a little piece of this one that catches my eye. They're lobbying Congress to give them a protection, like a little bubble to sit in, meaning the schools, a little bubble to sit in case they accidentally violate name, image, and likeness rules and they don't get sued. So imagine, I don't know, Tiki and Rondae Barber at the University of Virginia are having great junior seasons and going into their senior year or fourth year, as we would say, going into their fourth year, some big promotion pops up, a billboard on, you know, on Route 81, you know, heading down the middle of the state, mm-hmm. and somebody's making money off of it. And it's me and my brother and our likenesses. Mm-hmm. But we don't see a dime of that. We could sue, right? Because there's name, image, likeness. They want a bubble. They're trying to create a bubble to prevent those type of things from happening. And I get it. I get why they spent all this money lobbying.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to come off as hypocritical. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually on the universities and conferences side with this.
It's funny that you say that, because I was reading something from the Sporting News earlier. This is how they start their piece. In fiscal year 2018, the SEC reported that it had earned a revenue of $627 million, a number that seemed certain to escalate when it was revealed that the league was about to move its top weekly games from CBS to ABC for some more money. Now, the SEC, when you look at this, and I'm just trying to read past there. Hold on. So basically their point was, you know, if you have all of this revenue that's generated, why would you not spend what amounts to pennies on the dollar to try to protect those loopholes?
That's right.
It's bad business not to.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, even it seems insensitive.
Yep.
It seems archaic, but it's actually business.
Agreed.
Bottom line.
And look, these colleges and universities are businesses now, man. It's big money. They got budgets that they got to balance. And yes, I know they're not for profit, but they got to balance it. So I give them credit for actually thinking about this and not being caught in a plethora of lawsuits because they, you know, use someone's or use the player's number or whatever it may be on some sort of advertisement that the player didn't benefit from. You know, that because that's going to happen. You know what I mean? So they need to find a way to protect themselves, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. We've got an interesting baseball conversation coming up. Tom Glavine had some interesting things that he weighed in from the players and how they could be perceived and really lose badly in the court of public opinion. But there's also an email going around that maybe speaks to the old story, the old mantra, crying wolf here. And the contents are interesting. This is all about angling. This is all about getting the upper hand. I understand that, public perception. But the contents here paint a pretty vivid picture, some of the obstacles for baseball and what they need to do to avoid just being crucified again in the court of public opinion. Teek and I'll get to that. If you missed our chat with the former commissioner, Paul Tagliabue, go check it out, radio.com, Apple iTunes. It was great. Pulled down a letter from President Reagan back in the day in his wall, in his office. It was phenomenal. But we'll get to the baseball stuff coming up next on this busy Wednesday. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.